Welcome to Energy Matters, where we explore alternative health in the Pioneer Valley. I'm your host, Caroline Rutterman, and I'm a Reiki professional and intuitive in Northampton, Massachusetts. For the past 9 years, I've been teaching people how to use their intuition and helping them reduce stress and anxiety. Together, we'll talk with other practitioners and learn how they bring health and healing to the Pioneer Valley. Let's do this. Hey, welcome, welcome, everyone. You are listening to Energy Matters, and I am your host, Caroline Rutterman. And we are here today chatting with John Perdrize. He's a doctor of the Sanctuary Animal Clinic in Holyoke. Welcome, John.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course. Thanks for being here. So I found you because I bring my cats to you. I think you've only actually met one of my cats.
Yes.
Not mm-hmm. both of them yet. My two twin black cats are very special to me. And I had moved to this area. And as I was going to a couple of different veterinary clinics in the area, I was just really impressed with your kindness towards my very, very small cat.
Oh, so. Thank you. My staff is... taught me to do that.
Yeah. You learn a lot from your staff.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. That's always really special to me to see that, you know, a new person, a new doctor is mm-hmm. treating my animals with as much love as I would be able to. So, but you have a beautiful Victorian home. That's also your clinic in Holyoke.
Yes.
And tell me a little bit about that place, because it's a gorgeous building.
Well, we've had it for about 21 years, and I moved into Holyoke 24 years ago and bought a house down the street from the clinic, a big old Victorian house, and fell in love with that. My wife, Francine, and I fixed that up, lived there, and over time, we walked by the clinic, which is another big old Victorian house at the other end of the block. Mm-hmm. And it came up for sale, and we'd walk by it all the time, and I'd look at it, and over a two-year period, it never got sold, and I kept looking at it, thinking about my younger days, wishing that I could do what James Herriot did, and some of you out there have heard of James Herriot. He wrote the book All Creatures Great and Small, and he also practiced out of a Victorian home in the hinterlands of Scotland. And I fell in love with that picture of veterinary medicine, actually taking a home and turning it into a veterinary clinic, which is, I think, a much better space than your typical medical facility for animals.
And some of your online reviews speak to that, because it's like, oh, you know, some of the reviews that I remember reading were, you know, about people bringing their otherwise very nervous dogs mm-hmm. into that home, and then the mm-hmm. dogs stay calm. Mm-hmm. And it feels, you know, there's a beautiful sitting room right when you walk in, mm-hmm. and it doesn't have that clinical smell.
Right. Yes, that's thanks to Joyce, who is out there somewhere. She comes on every Saturday and works like crazy keeping that place clean for me. But it's also thanks to my wife, Francine, for the vision. Once we bought the practice, once we bought the house, it had nothing in it. It was pretty stark. But with her vision, we took it back to its Victorian roots, put in all new lighting, put in new wallpapers. We made it quiet, and we made it with as low light as possible. Even in the exam room, there's an exam table that's not stainless steel. It's more warm and has earth tones to it, and the lighting is low. If I need more intense lighting, I bring it over at the time I need it. But for most of the examination time, the animal's in a lower light setting, a more natural light setting, and they don't feel quite as anxious.
Does the higher lighting increase stress for animals?
Absolutely. And I think it does for people too. When you're in a very high intense lighting situation, I think unnatural lighting situation, I think that it stimulates you more than you know, and starts to affect the way you act. And it certainly does with animals. There's no question about it.
I know. I mean, we're here to talk about animals today, but all of a sudden I started thinking of this glowing cell phone in my eyes, mm-hmm. and I'm sure that affects me.
Absolutely.
I know they always say don't have your cell phone in front of you before you go to bed, and so So something that really is stand out, an additional thing that stands out about your business is that you are a holistic veterinary medicine. You
yes.
do
mm-hmm.
traditional Chinese medicine
Absolutely.
For animals.
Yes, I do.
Tell me a little bit about what that is, just like kind of the basic.
Sure. Well, I was trained in traditional Western medicine. I got my DVM from Cornell University and a PhD from Cornell University and board certification. It's a lot of years of practice doing traditional Western medicine. And I did that for until probably 2006 or 7, at which time I felt like I was hitting the wall, that there were plenty of patients that I could do no more for with Western medicine. I used the antibiotics, the steroids, the anti-anxiety drugs, and the animals needed so much more. It was my wife, Francine, that led me to the Qi Institute, which is one of the only institutes in the United States that teaches traditional Chinese medicine to veterinarians. And I took all of their courses, and in 2017 became one of the first of 18 veterinarians to get a master's degree in Chinese medicine. And the way Chinese medicine works is it is holistic. It looks at so many things. For example, here's one that blows people away, is when you say to me, my cat has a cough or my dog is limping, I'll ask you, what time of the day is it worse? In Western medicine, the doctor would look at you with a blank look and say, who cares? But in Chinese medicine, it matters because of the circadian clock, the time of the day that qi, you've heard of qi? Qi is life force, the flow through the body. All things have qi, not just living things, but rocks and sand and everything has qi. That energy flow goes through 12 channels in the body. If you've ever looked at an acupuncture chart of a human or an animal, you'll see these lines all over the body. Those are meridians or channels. And the qi flow changes every 2 hours to a different channel. Mm. So it's pretty much like high tides. High tides in a 24-hour period hit different ports throughout the world. And so if it's 3 to 5 in the morning, it's high tide or the highest qi flow for lung. If it's 3 in the afternoon, it's the bladder. So each of the meridians gets different qi flows at different times of the day. And that is incorporated into your exam. That's part of the exam. Another really interesting thing in Chinese medicine is we look at things that we don't normally look at in Western medicine. They concentrate very much on what we call the tongue and the pulse. Stick the tongue out, and it can be very challenging to get a cat to stick its tongue out.
That was my next thought.
It's not like a person where you can say, ah. So sometimes we'll try to feed them a treat, or we'll put little something on the table for them to lick if they will. And other times you wait patiently for the cat to finally give you a glance of its tongue. But in Western medicine, we never even look at the color of the tongue, other than if it's really pale, like the gums, it probably has anemia. Bingo, that's it.
Right.
But in Chinese medicine, the color of the tongue, it can be red, can be pink, can be pale, can be purple, can have a yellow coating, a white coating. It can be enlarged, it can be small. And all these things come into play in making the final diagnosis. The other thing which is amazing to me and doesn't go with our Western understanding of the circulatory system is the pulse. We take the pulse on an animal. We take the pulse on the left and the right. Now, based on Western medicine, the blood pressure in those two pulses, in particular in animals, small animals, we use the femoral artery, should be the same. The left and the right shouldn't be different. They're coming from the same heart. They're coming from the same aorta, so it should be the same blood pressure. But if you palpate an animal and you get good at palpating those vessels, there's a difference from one side to the other. There's no way to explain that in Western medicine, but there is in Chinese medicine. There's yin and yang. There's qi and blood. And each of the pulses that we take on left or right can tell us about those things. They can also tell us in spots on those arteries about the lung, On one side of it is the lung, the spleen, and the kidney. On the other side is the heart, the liver, and the kidney yin. And so we can tell by feeling those pulses if there's a problem with the lung or is there a problem with the liver without doing any laboratory work. It's certainly important to have Western backup. We like to get our Western backup of medicine. Knowing about the liver enzymes can help support the diagnosis of there's a problem with the liver. But in Chinese medicine, it's more about the energy flow.
That's really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that especially when you're working with an animal who is nonverbal and, you know, having these systems of the pulse and the tongue to be able to rely on additional, you know, kind of nonverbal clues that the mm-hmm. body is offering is only going to add, you know, levels of understanding to, you know, what's going on for our little furry creatures.
Absolutely. There's no question about it that it has opened up a whole new avenue for me. I mean, I was practicing Western medicine for 26 years. And when I added Chinese medicine, I could do so much more with just our sight, smell, palpation, taste, those things that we have at our immediate disposal.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So you have a few pretty thick books over here. One of them is called Four Paws, Five Directions.
Yes.
And you also have your master's thesis for mm-hmm. From the Qi Institute that yeah. you just wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have another Between Heaven and Earth, A Guide to Chinese Medicine.
Mm-hmm.
These are all pretty hefty books.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely comes with a lot of knowledge in there.
There's quite a bit to learn.
Yeah.
But these two books that I brought along were for people that want to understand or get a little bit more in depth, but not be overwhelmed, because there's books that can be overwhelming. Chinese medicine is, don't have anybody try to tell you that it's superficial and there's not a lot to it. It is complicated. And the more you learn, the more you find out you need to learn.
You're a doctor.
Right. So these two books I brought so that the listening audience, if they'd like to find a book to start to learn Chinese medicine, learn something about it, these two books are a good starting place. Between Heaven and Earth, it's a guide to Chinese medicine. It's a human medical text, but it's very, very easy to transpose it to animals. It's by Harriet Benfield, B-E-I-N, Field, F-I-E-L-D, and Ephraim Korngold, K-O-R-N-G-O-L-D. The other one is Four Paws and Five Directions. It's by Cheryl Schwartz, S-C-H-W-A-R-T-Z, and it's a guide to Chinese medicine for dogs and cats. And that's an excellent one to get started with your own pet.
Absolutely. And, you know, I know we have a pretty savvy listening audience out there. So there might be some other acupuncturists listening who might mm-hmm. be interested in, you know, bringing, you know, animal care into their practice, mm-hmm. You know, or treating their own animals or vice
sure.
versa.
Yeah.
Having.
Yeah.
You've mentioned a couple of times how your wife has been a bit of a muse for
mm-hmm.
you
yes.
with the design of the house
yes.
and also
she's very artistic. Yes.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. also getting you into your veterinarian practice paired with sometimes
chain.
My brain gets a little stumbly. Excuse me.
Me too.
Mixing with the acupuncture and the traditional Chinese medicine. What was Francine's influence with the acupuncture?
Big. She's the one that really got me to do it.
Well,
I can remember sitting in the living room, and I have lots of trade journals and veterinary journals coming across my doorway every day that I need to look at and keep up with. And one day she plopped an advertisement that had come in the mail about doing acupuncture through the Qi Institute. They're in Redick, Florida. If any of you want to Google that and look at their website, they're absolutely amazing. It's CHI, not QI, CHI Institute in Redick, R-E-D-D-I-C-K, Florida. And I looked at the program and my wife said, you know, I think this would be good for you. So I went for it, and
it
changed
it.
My life. Changed my life.
She just said, do this. And
yes.
you're like, okay.
Good husband.
That's kind kind of amazing. And it also shows that you have a lot of trust in your partnership.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's so wonderful.
Yeah. I would love to know a little bit more about how you got into veterinary care in the beginning. I know you mentioned that you were really influenced by that vision of all creatures, great and small.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Did you always envision yourself doing this as a little kid?
No, no. When I was 12 years old, my mother got me a book, one of those laminated books where you could, there's acetate where it, you have three different layers, and it was on the heart. And I wanted to be a heart doctor when I was 12 years old. And then came from a really big Irish Catholic family, and 15, 20 cousins over the house every weekend. We were just a big extended family. And I was the youngest of the boys, and I was a little Johnny. And I stayed little Johnny until one day I finally found my niche. My father had bought an old farm in Maine, and I went up and spent the summer there. And one day I was helping the neighbors who had a dairy farm, and they all had to get out in the field and hay, but there was a veterinarian coming that needed to do surgery on a cow. They said, could you stay and help? I did. I stayed and helped the veterinarian, and I watched him do this amazing abdominal surgery on a standing cow.
Wow.
With his arms up to his shoulders into the cow, and me standing there wide-eyed handing him things that he needed. And at the end he said, you're pretty good at helping. He said, you got a job for the summer? I said, no. He said, you want to work with me? And I worked with him for the rest of the summer. When I came home, I came home at the end of the summer. It was a Labor Day, and I was 16 years old, and I'd always been little Johnny with in the background. Everybody wanted to hear my stories.
Oh,
I had
yeah.
so many James Harriet stories of horses caught under the barn and
Whoa.
Cats hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah.
that everybody loved me after that, and I just loved the profession. Never
Whoa.
Looked back.
So your calling came to you.
Yes, it did.
That's mm-hmm. really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
You are listening to Energy Matters, and we are here chatting with Dr. John Perdrize, who is a traditional Chinese medicine veterinarian. I don't know why I'm having such a hard time saying that
There's
word
so
today.
There's so much to it, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, interestingly, you should say that, because 90% of the world, including veterinary schools, get the word wrong. It's veterinary or veterinarian. Want to say that?
Veterinarian.
Yes. You know what most people say?
Veterinarian.
Veterinarian.
Oh.
This is a veterinary school. They leave out the ER, and it's veterinarian, not veterinarian.
Okay.
So I've always had a bug about that, and I'm glad that you brought it up.
I'm glad that I kept mispronouncing it for you. So that's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about what are the different aspects of traditional Chinese medicine that you do? You mentioned that you're using diagnostic aspects with the animals, including the pulse readings on each
yes.
side
yes.
of the animal
mm-hmm.
of each side of the arteries
mm-hmm.
or the veins. You mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
You also do a little bit of tongue reading
mm-hmm.
with the animals. What other aspects of traditional Chinese medicine do you use?
Sure. As far as diagnostic or therapeutic or both?
I'm going to say therapeutic.
Okay, therapeutic, whole different. After we've made our diagnosis, or what we call a pattern diagnosis, like kidney qi deficiency or kidney yang deficiency or lung blood deficiency. When we've made one of these diagnoses, then we choose, there are five modalities in Chinese medicine. And those modalities are acupuncture. Most people have heard of acupuncture and herbology. Most people haven't heard of two of the five of the others. One is food therapy, which is incredibly fascinating. We could do two shows on it easily. In food therapy, for example, in Chinese medicine, they don't look at, as we do in Western medicine, when you're trying to decide what diet to put your dog on, a nutritionist will tell you, you need to get your protein, your carbohydrate, your fats, minerals, and vitamins set. Once you do, use whatever protein you want. Doesn't matter whether it's duck or chicken or beef. In Chinese medicine, they don't even look at the protein, fat, and carbohydrate content. They look at the energy level, the energy that is transmitted from that food. And for example, fish versus lamb. Which do you think is hotter, fish or lamb?
Well, in my mind, I would think that fish are in water and have a lot of oil and fat. And I think that lamb is a denser protein, so maybe that is harder to digest or takes longer to. So I'm going to say lamb.
Absolutely. So in the middle, think about.
I'm always right,
if,
guys.
If you weren't a vegetarian, and you would love a leg of lamb in the middle of the winter, but you don't want one when you're out on the beach, right?
Right.
So fish is cooling, and lamb is warming, and you'll see plenty of young, crazy Labrador retrievers on lamb. That's crazy. It makes them hot. It makes them hotter. It's lamb is great for the 14-year-old Labrador retriever, but not the 2-year-old.
And so when you say that a baby, a little puppy Labrador retriever being hotter, mm-hmm. what does that mean?
Their energy level is high. There's yin and yang. Yin and yang must be balanced. You know, the yin-yang symbol is called a Taji Tu. It means the supreme ultimate. It means you're perfectly balanced and in harmony with nature. That's what that symbol means. And that's what we try to attain. But nobody and no animal has attained it. We all are off. And the way a young animal is off is they tend to have more energy. They're young, they're growing, their metabolism is higher. And so therefore, because of that, their yang energy is exceeding their yin energy. They're not balanced. And an older animal, usually the yang energy has decreased and decreased, and now they're cold, and their yin isn't necessarily gotten larger, but they have more yin than yang, and so now they're colder.
So whether it's hot and cold, mm-hmm. Those are words that we're associating with the energy flows of the yin mm-hmm. and the yang.
That's right. And they say yang in China, not yang. But
yang. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that correction.
That's okay. So we talked about acupuncture, and well, not talked about it, but we mentioned acupuncture, herbal medicine, food therapy, all as modalities for healing the problem. But there's also two others. One is called Tuina, T-U-I-N-A. Tuina is Chinese medical massage. There are 24 different types of positions or things you do with your hands for massage, and it's of course takes into incorporation the acupuncture meridians when you're using these massage techniques. So there's Tuina that we use. In fact, I often will use Tuina in an anxious animal that's not ready for acupuncture. Mm. There are plenty of cats that come in that I'm not going to put 5 or 6 acupuncture needles in, but if I spend some time doing some Tuina first and get a mat massage and relaxed, I might be able to get 2 needles in this session. 5 sessions down the road, I might be able to get 10 needles in where I would have never been able to get 1 in the first time. You got to build up their trust, and Tuina is a wonderful way to do that.
Wow.
The last modality is called Qigong, and you've all heard Qigong, Tai Chi. Qigong literally means energy work. It's getting your body aligned. But people say you can't do that with animals. Animals can't do Qigong. And I wouldn't totally agree. I think as time goes on, just like people have taught some horses to do yoga, you're going to get animals to do Qigong if you're good at it somehow, someday. Not me, somebody. But we as practitioners, we as people, can practice Qigong and Tai Chi, and the energy that we have will transmit to the animal that we are examining. That's why I often have dogs that normally would be skittish and want to bite, will let me come up to it and pet it, because I've done some Qigong before I came into the room.
So you're calming yourself down.
Absolutely.
You're moving your own energy mm-hmm. systems mm-hmm. with Qigong, mm-hmm. and then you're approaching the animal in a calmer state.
Sure, exactly. And one of the biggies for that with anybody out there is your breathing. In fact, I used to teach at Cornell, and teach students animal restraint and techniques, and this was before I knew Chinese medicine, and now that I know it, it makes a lot of sense. I would tell students when they approached an animal to give it a shot, to take its temperature, to look in its ear, breathe. What does an animal do? What does a predator do just before it attacks a horse? Holds its breath and jumps, okay?
Ooh, yeah.
What happens when you pick up a hammer and hit something? You hold your breath. But if when you touch the animal, you breathe, but let out a big breath just before you touch them. They get that. They feel it. And it's saying, it's like the white flag. I'm not going to hurt you.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about the different types of animals that you work with.
Well, I'm doing less and less of everything, but I used to do everything. I took care of Forest Park Zoo in Springfield for 12 years.
Oh, lovely. Mm-hmm, they have some big cats there.
They did. And I got really good with a blowgun.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. Yeah. One escaped monkey got in the trees and we had to get it with a blowgun one day. And you should have seen the five different groups of people all with blankets underneath waiting to catch it as it fell.
Oh my
goodness.
And
we did. We got it. Yeah. Anyway, so I did the zoo for a while. But primarily now I do dogs, cats, and horses. That's probably 80% of what I do. I used to do a lot more sheep, goats, llamas, pigs, alpacas, cows.
Wow.
I still do some pigs and especially pet pigs. People have them in their houses.
They're getting very trendy right now. Mm-hmm. Even Ariana Grande has a pet pig.
Hope she spends a lot of time training it.
I'm sure she'll pay somebody to train it. So you're doing more pet pigs, and a lot of people have pet pigs around here?
No, I have no idea how many, but I probably have 10, 12 clients with pet pigs.
Do they live inside?
They live inside, or if Michelle's listening in Ludlow, she has a barn with oriental rugs, a TV, a wood stove, a couch. I mean, these pigs live in luxury.
It's like a dog house, but for pigs.
Yes.
In luxury.
Yes, yes.
That's really neat.
But mostly what I do is the horses.
Getting ideas.
are horses and dogs and cats. That's probably 80% of what I do.
Mm-hmm. That's fabulous. That's really fabulous. Mm-hmm. So would you say that one type of animal or one particular breed responds more to traditional Chinese medicine than others?
That's a really good question.
Like, do horses respond better than pigs?
You just nailed it. Horses. Pigs, I would say good luck. Mainly because, at least with acupuncture, their hide is very, very thick. And they're very sensitive. So those don't go together well. You can use a tiny needle on a sensitive animal, except a pig, because it's going to bend. So you need bigger. You need to do they call it the flying needle technique. Flip that needle right in really quick before they feel it with pigs. But with horses, I find that you can actually see the change during the whole time you do the acupuncture session. Mm-hmm. Within a half an hour, their demeanor changes, their breathing changes,
Wow. The
way they hold their limbs, they get very relaxed. And some dogs do that and some cats, but horses more than any other species. Yeah.
That's really, really beautiful. Mm-hmm.
But you can see it with cats. What changed my mind on when I took the acupuncture course, when I began it, I was a skeptic. I didn't believe it would necessarily work as well. You know, traditionally 25 years of Western medicine makes you pretty arrogant. And so when I took that class, after the first meeting down there, the instructor said, now when you go home, please use this. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. And the first cat I did was a cat that had chronic constipation. And this cat, we had to wear thick leather gloves every time it came out of the cage because it was so angry for good reason. It was chronically constipated. The only thing you could do would be sedate it and do enemas on it 4 or 5 times a year.
Nobody wants that.
Nobody likes that. Well, we started doing acupuncture on this cat, and I became an instant believer because the third time the cat came in, we didn't need gloves. It sat on a table and it purred. And it had been getting enemas 4 to 5 times a year for 3 years.
Wow.
The last 3 years of its life, it got one enema.
Wow.
And it sat and purred every time it came into my clinic at acupuncture.
Oh.
It was amazing.
You had built a lot of trust
with
that animal.
Yes, absolutely. And it knew. It knew you were helping it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that I wanted to bring up a little bit because, you know, a lot of people, I'm a big believer in animal communication, this sort of how animal communicators or pet psychics, you know, have this idea of, you know, animals know they can communicate with their thoughts or through images, and they have not only in emotional depth, but they very much understand what we're saying, what we're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other end of the spectrum, there's people who, you know, call their dogs, affectionately call their dogs dum-dums.
And yeah, sure.
Do you have any opinions on how, as somebody who works so closely with animals, and clearly, you know, they can feel trust mm-hmm. with a stranger, with mm-hmm. a, you know, medical professional. Mm-hmm. How much do animals understand us?
Oh, gosh. I think we have underestimated animals for so long. I think they understand us much more than we know. And unfortunately, everybody's going to get the answer they look for. If you believe that they understand you, you will get understanding. If you believe that they're a dumb animal, that's what you're going to get back from them. There's been a fascinating study on dolphins and humans. You know about a functional MRI? Have you heard of functional MRI?
I'm not familiar.
You know what an MRI is?
Of course.
Well, MRI is a functional MRI is when they do an MRI in real time. They're doing an MRI on your brain, and they're saying, think about writing, or they'll say, write, or screw this piece of wood together. And they can watch your brain while you're doing that to see what parts light up, how much is, and what they found is with humans that we are incredibly good at manipulating our environment, which is why we've taken over the world. That does not mean we're the most dominant, or we're the most, what's the word I'm looking for?
Intelligent
animal on the planet. They did functional MRIs on dolphins.
Mm.
And when they did dolphin MRIs, do you know what? They have a part of their brain that's 80% bigger than ours. It's the compassion center.
Aww.
Yeah. So who's the most, who's the better species? Who knows? You know. But I do absolutely believe that they respond in kind. The more you think they can do, the more they will be able to do.
That's just really
like
beautiful.
Kids.
Yeah. Just like kids, right? Whatever you create, whatever kind of environment you create for them, they'll thrive or, you know, learn from that.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me a little bit about the types of things that you see with animals, the types of problems that people bring their animals in.
You see, I mean, this is the nice part about Chinese medicine that I learned. If you ask most Western doctors, what do you use acupuncture for? What do you use Chinese medicine for? It's musculoskeletal, period. You know, for joint problems, you know, or a ligament that's hurt. It's all musculoskeletal disease. But Chinese medicine opened up the whole avenue. They take care of behavioral issues. They take care of internal medicine problems. They take care of asthma. They take care of, in horses, something called laminitis, where your feet get inflamed.
Mm.
Imagine if you stood on your toenails all the time and then suddenly they got inflamed. What would you do? Yes, it's incredibly painful. And we have things, acupuncture and herbals and Tuina, that can help them, whereas before I couldn't. So Chinese medicine can help in any way that Western medicine can.
Do you have a favorite thing that you like to treat with animals?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I'm my background was infectious diseases. That's what I primarily taught, and that's what my PhD was in, was infectious disease. So I'm fascinated by trying to stimulate our immune system to ward off badness. And in Chinese medicine, there's 32 different kinds of qi. Believe it or not, there probably are more, but there's 32 they use in medicine. And one of them is called Wei Qi, W-E-I Qi. The other is called Zong Qi, or Zhang Qi, Z-H-E-N-G, Zhang Qi. Wei Qi is your external immune system. Think of it as like your mucous membrane barriers that keep out the bad cold. Zhang Qi is, think of it as more your internal immunity and your antibody response. But I love trying to stimulate that in even a normal animal. Any animal that walks through my door isn't necessarily there for acupuncture. It could be just for a routine, you know, yearly visit. But I could put an acupuncture needle on that animal that'll help its immune system. Just one. and we could talk about my study later, but there is a spot called GV14, and GV14 is at the base of the neck between the shoulders, and GV14 is an incredibly powerful acupuncture spot for stimulating the immune system. Mm. And so I like to do that type of thing. But as far as specific diseases, no, I think it's all fascinating. I like to treat, I've treated eye problems with acupuncture. I've treated asthma and heaves in horses with, heaves is a type of asthma for horses. I've treated all those things. And I get a lot of animals that come in with musculoskeletal disease, especially old ones. You know, you're getting the old dog that can't make it up the stairs anymore.
Yeah.
And you can really help those animals a lot.
I know. I often see there's a German Shepherd that walks in my neighborhood, mm-hmm. and the back legs, he's an older mm-hmm. dog, mm-hmm. and, you know, I'm always like,
yep,
oh.
Genetics is a tough thing.
Yeah, yeah. How do you use your intuition in your work? Because I know that you're a very intuitive person, and I know that also working with animals, you're super intuitive, because that's just the nature of working with a nonverbal creature.
Yeah, I would like to think that I should be a super intuitive person.
Well, let's take the should out of this.
This is what I'll say
here.
Is that being Western trained originally and working, doing everything you could do in Western medicine, getting as many degrees as you can get in Western medicine, intuition wasn't considered a part of that. It was all very straightforward. Get the numbers and treat by the numbers. I am still on my training wheels when it comes to intuition. I think all of us are. I think as a species, we need to believe it more. And unfortunately, it's downplayed too often. And the way I try to get people to think about it in a good way of making your intuition a more important part of what you do is look at the way physics works. Physics was always Newtonian physics, and that's what we all knew. You know, an apple falls from the tree and hits you in the head, that's gravity. But there was a whole other side of physics that came up when, what's light? Light is a particle, or is it a wave? Which is it? You know, if it's a particle, yay, that's good old Newtonian physics. If it's a wave, whoa, what the heck's that? And that's quantum physics. And so now we have two ways of looking at reality. And that's what we need to be able to do with medicine and in your everyday life. You should believe your Western medicine doctor, but if he or she says, oh, I don't believe this other stuff, it's kind of wacky, don't necessarily believe it. Turn to them and say, hey, you know about quantum physics, why don't you believe in that? So this is the way I look at it, as I believe in my intuitive ability to help these animals. I am learning more and more every day how to use that. And it does all come initially from your senses. The immediate sense, when an animal comes through the door and looks you in the eye, you see so much right then and there. That gives you so much of the picture. And that look in your eye, it's called your Shen, S-H-E-N, in Chinese medicine. And your Shen is your outlook towards life. And when an animal comes in and it's depressed and it's dull in the eye and its head is hanging and it's shuffling its feet, you know there's a lot more that you're going to have to do for this one than a dog that's coming in and won't even touch its leg to the ground, but it's happy and panting and wants a treat, you know? So you have to look at other things.
And I feel like that's such a huge part of why I like traditional Chinese medicine, is because it does look at everything.
Mm, yes.
We're mm-hmm. not just treating that one thing that's wrong. It ends up having, you know, this ripple effect for, you know, mood and anxiety and depression, but also, you know, the physical muscular skeletal stuff. And
that's right.
You know, it has
in the big picture, that's what because it's a holistic approach. Take Chinese medicine's approach about elements. It's called five element Chinese medicine. Have you heard of that term? So there's five elements. There's wood, there's fire, there's earth, there's metal, and there's water. Now, all people in all animals, everybody has all five of those in their personality. You can be a water dog, or you can be a fire dog. You can be a wood person, or you can be an earth person. They're all parts of our being, but if you're more one than the others, and most people usually are, you're usually more of one or two of those five, it will predispose you to certain diseases. If you're a fire personality, you're going to have more problems with your heart. You're going to have more problems with relationships. You're going to have more problems with anxiety. If you're a earth person or an earth dog, you're going to have more GI problems. If you're a metal horse, you're going to have more problems with your lung. So I can tell just by evaluating the animal and knowing what constitution it is, what its predisposing problems are. And so if it's healthy now and I know it's a metal horse, I can give it herbals or acupuncture or tuina or food that will help support its metal constitution instead of saying, well, I don't know, feed it whatever you want, you know.
That's really, really important, I think, for people, you know, who are maybe just going to get the cheapest food or mm-hmm. something that mm-hmm. is, you know, at CVS late at night, you know, to be able to know that this is going to affect my animal because it's their part of their constitution
right.
and this kind of
Absolutely.
Behavior is going to come out later one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I am curious about, and I know that on our break, you mentioned that legally you are not allowed to talk about CBD oil.
Hmm.
So can I ask your non-professional opinion
sure.
About what's up with the CBD oil for pets? Why is this? I know because it's legalization and everything in Massachusetts, people are finding a lot of relief for their own human
mm-hmm.
anxieties.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What's your opinion on people bringing this to their animals?
The biggest problem, of course, is marijuana in the form we all know it, which has a high level of THC in it. And that's the psychoactive part of
marijuana.
And
that's toxic.
Well, dogs have 10, I don't know exactly the percentage, but at least 10 times higher the number of receptors in their brain for THC than people. So therefore, yes, it's more potent in dogs and can be more toxic, the THC. That doesn't mean that we should look at marijuana as just THC. It has other valuable parts to it, and one of them is CBD oil, cannabidiol oil. And cannabidiol oil is an excellent herbal part of the whole marijuana plant that is good for, it can be good for arthritis, it can be good for your liver, it can be good for anxiety. There's a lot of things it can be good for. It's been used as an anti-inflammatory for itchy dogs, all kinds of things. So I am not adverse to using it. It's just as a professional, we're not supposed to talk about it.
What are the legal like stipulations around that? Where is that? Why are you not legally allowed to talk about it?
Well, ask the federal government that. It's again, you know, it's the laws against marijuana and against substance abuse. So,
so it's a federal, mm-hmm. it's a federal thing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's okay. I was just curious.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it's an up and coming, very important part of the armamentarium we're going to have in herbal medicine. Yes.
I know that herbal medicine is also part of traditional Chinese medicine.
Mm-hmm.
What types of herbs do you bring in for animal care currently?
That's a great question because the way you asked the question, you asked that question from a Western perspective, and that is what kind of herbs do I bring in? And we are used to in Western medicine looking at herbology or herbs as one herb for one reason and one specific active ingredient, like marijuana, THC. You want it for THC or you want it for CBD. And so you use it for that specific reason. In Chinese medicine, it is rare to use a single herb. You can. Coptis is one. Coptis is very cooling. So if you have a hot spot on a dog, Coptis is good for it. Or if you have a raging diarrhea with blood in it, Coptis is good for short periods
of
time.
Get your Coptis, people.
So there are times when a specific herb, ginger, you know, ginger is great for indigestion. Ginger is really good for diaphoresis, for making you sweat, getting rid
of. Sorry, I don't know why I made myself laugh over.
That's good. I mean, how often do you talk about diarrhea on the radio, right?
Well, so. Probably more often than most people.
but in Chinese medicine, the way we look at the way they use herbs is a collection. It's usually anywhere between 5 and 15 herbs in a formula, and that formula is designed to treat a specific pattern. The formula will have a king herb, it will have minister herbs, it will have assistant herbs, and it will have harmonious herbs. Herbs, because some of the herbs are going to be more caustic, like Coptis is really cooling. And if a lot of the formulas, one I use a lot is Xingling Baizhu. And Xingling Baizhu is great for diarrhea. It has Coptis in it, but if you look at the formula carefully, it has two other herbs that mollify or decrease the cold effects of the Coptis. And so they have taken 2,000 years to come up with some of these formulas, and there's a lot of thought that has gone into them.
That's really, really interesting. I like that a lot. Mm-hmm. It's refreshing to know that, you know, these have been proven over time.
Yes. Mm-hmm. One thing that you'll find is you can't hurt a dog, cat, horse that I'm practicing. You can't hurt them with the herbs like you can Western medicine. If you give too much, you might get them to stop eating. They don't like it. Or they could, worse, get diarrhea. But the herbals that we use are not going to cause a severe problem. People say, oh, that's not true, ephedra. Have you heard of ephedra? Okay. Mm-hmm. Ephedra is a very effective herbal in Chinese medicine. We're not using it in the United States because the FDA won't let us. But it's essentially, the reason is because you had a bunch of weightlifters that used ephedra at 100 to 500 times the dose that we would use in Chinese medicine. Mm-hmm. And they're like, starting to have heart attacks, heart problems associated with ephedra. And so they took it off the market saying, see, here's an example of Chinese medicine is bad for you. Well, if you just took 50 aspirin right now, they would take that off the market too if you had to do that every time you opened an aspirin bottle.
Absolutely.
You know, it doesn't make sense.
Do you, is traditional Chinese medicine, traditional Chinese veterinary medicine practiced differently in Europe and overseas?
Oh, you know, I can't comment on that directly, but no, I think it's pretty much the same. I'm a member, and in fact, I'm on the board of the World Association of Traditional Chinese Medicine, of Veterinary Medicine.
Cool.
And we have practitioners from 35 different countries, and we meet once a year, and when you get together and talk to them, they pretty much do what we do. It really just depends more on your particular climate, what you're going to see more of. You know, in Florida, you see a lot more damp heat than we see up here. Up here, we have a lot more cold and wind, you know. And the same thing with Spain or Thailand, wherever you go, you're going to find there's more regional problems. But the philosophy behind the medicine that we use, the Chinese medicine, is the same.
Very, very cool. Mm. Very cool. Well, is there anything that you'd like to let people know about winter animal care in a ways that traditional Chinese medicine could support?
Oh, great.
Maybe a little helpful tip or trick for the winter?
Yes. Winter is, remember I talked about the five elements?
Yes.
Wood, fire, earth, water. This is the season of water. So even if your animal is perfectly healthy, you should help its constitution of that time of year. In the middle of summer, you know, you probably want to give them cooling food. In the middle of warmer winter, you want to give them things that help warm them up. Bone soup is an excellent example of that, or bone broth that people talk about, especially in the older animals, that can be given. Also, seaweed and sardines. These things are all the water element. They all come from the water, and they will help support the water constitution of that particular animal that particular season, regardless of what the animal's overall constitution is. It's the season of the water, so you need to treat for that.
Fabulous. John, where can people find you if they are interested in, are you taking
come
on?
Come on down.
Right, yeah. are you taking on new animal clients? I'm sure you treat the people, not, mm-hmm. you don't treat the people, but you probably, it's a,
sometimes it's a, I feel like I do.
Yeah. It's a pairing, you know, I mean, you treat the animal, but yes, the person yes. is still there.
That's
too.
Right. It's a team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're taking on new clients
yes,
currently?
Yes. Yeah, particularly the traditional Chinese veterinary medical clients, yeah. I like to see more of those, yes.
How can people find you?
That's a good question.
Because you do, I know you're on Facebook. You do have a Facebook page
I
for
do,
the Sanctuary
but I don't,
Animal
I don't keep it up like I should. And I don't have a web page at this point. But you can call the clinic. You could, if you Googled the clinic, you'll find us. There's lots of stuff out there, you know. Yelp will probably yell about me. But our phone number is 413-532-2175, good old-fashioned way.
All right. So that is Dr. John Perdrizé. And shout out that phone number one more time, a little bit more slowly, so that people can go ahead and grab their pens if they need to.
413-532-2175.
Perfect. And I bring my animals to you, and I am a very happy camper, and so are my little cats. So.
Oh, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming on our show today.
It was a pleasure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. Well, have a great evening, and we will be back next week. So be well.